Tilden.
At 10!
Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10 begins right now. Brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. He'll beat anyone's advertised price. Or your mattress is free. As I said every day, tons to discuss today. I got tickets for Ann Wilson of Heart at the Grove of Anaheim and one of the top-selling artists of all time, Kenny Rogers, the Gambler's last deal. This could be his last tour ever. When I tell you to call for the news quiz, call because the phones light up. Apparently, a lot of people want to see Ann Wilson or Kenny Rogers. So I'll tell you when that's happening. I'm going to discuss the health care bill, but the first hour today is devoted to Dr. Kipper, who's sitting here with me. Hey, David, how are you?
Peter.
It's good to see you. Everything good?
Everything's great.
You're healthy. You got sick last. You had a little bit of a something.
I did. I'm all better.
One of the first times since I've known you that you actually were taken down by something.
It's no fun being sick. No kidding.
The phone number, if you have a question for Dr. Kipper, and you should call early, and I tell you to do that when he does come in, because it usually gets backed up toward the top half of the hour, and we want to get to as many people as possible. 800-222-5222 if you have any medical questions for Dr. Kipper, or you want a second opinion, or you have a surgery or a pain, or you're calling for somebody else as an advocate. 800-222-5222. David, the health care bill, they just came out. The Senate just revealed it today. We don't know what the final bill is going to have in it. Because they're waiting till next week for the Congressional Budget Office to give them some estimates of, A, how many people will lose coverage or how many people will have coverage, B, an estimate of what they think rates will be, what the costs will be and how they will be impacted, and then they can rejigger the bill and play with the bill. The part of the bill I think that concerns most people, and then we'll move on to specifics because there are questions that we got over the week about the flu, about, let me see what we're going to talk about. Oh, OCD linked to inflammation in the brain, which is kind of fascinating. Big story in the news is somebody's daughter died of a brain-eating amoeba from a water park. They're suing for $1 million. Immunotherapies for prostate cancer, and a new study that just came out about something that you can take for to help stave off Alzheimer's disease. So all of that's in the news. My biggest question for the healthcare thing, I don't care who passes what. I just want to know what's covered. Who decides what constitutes pre-existing condition? Don't you think that's a big issue? Because lobbyists are running around trying to get everything in that bill. Jack Abramoff, the former lobbyist, comes on usually on Wednesdays. Hasn't been on for a couple of weeks because he's been busy. But he said, oh, this is a reset for the lobbyists. They're all going to be running in there. The insurance companies, the hospitals, the tobacco companies, the soda companies, they're all in there pitching their wares to make sure that they're taken care of in this health coverage bill. I just started thinking the big deal is they can call anything a pre-existing condition. They can call a yeast infection. They can call, I read an article that said people would be hesitant under certain conditions to go have a colorectal exam because if you find a polyp that's it's removed and you don't have cancer, but it's precancerous, then they can list you as a pre-existing condition. And you know what? For insurance companies, it ain't about helping us. It's about business. And the way you make more money in business is you list more things as pre-existing condition. What is your take?
So here's the problem for a physician. A patient comes in and they have a chronic condition, and they want their insurance to pay for that visit to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you fill out these forms, the billing forms, which you give to the patient to give to the insurance company, and you identify what that pre-existing condition or chronic condition is. So then the insurance company decides, well, this is pre-existing. They're not going to pay for this. Or they tag you from that point forward as having this condition. So the patient gets upset with the doctor for indicating that. Yet they need the doctor to indicate that to get reimbursed. They don't get reimbursed. The other issue is that this is no surprise. You know, with Obamacare, Obama had a 3-year moratorium from the drug companies and the insurance companies not to raise their rates.
Yeah, because he could say, I'm out of office, and here we go.
And here we are at that period. So, of course, they're going to raise their rates. And in order to raise their rates, they're going to drop people off of these insurance.
Or figure out the best way to do it. They have strong lobbying, too. I'm curious to see how this bill ends up and what it really is going to do. Because here's the deal. You can't blame Obamacare forever. You can't say that. I mean, people just care about now. I want to care. Oh, great. I don't care whose fault something was. I want to know how much my premium is going to be and if it's going to cover my kid and if it's going to cover me. I mean, this is not a political thing for people. This is a life and death thing for a lot of people. So my concern is, again, the determination of what's pre-existing. If you're on Xanax because you had an issue for 6 months and you're not on it for the last 5 years, is that still a pre-existing condition that you had that and needed to take it? If you had surgery on your knee, but you're fine now, 100% fine, is it still pre-existing condition because you had surgery?
It's very similar and analogous, Peter, to life insurance. If you ever had anything wrong with you, the life insurance companies will then ding you and raise those premiums. It's the same thing with health insurance. If you ever had anything, if you had a hemorrhoid, if you had a sprained knee, if you had whatever it is.
But then everyone has a pre-existing condition. They could potentially nail everybody.
Yes, and when you go to submit your bills to the insurance company for these visits, they're not going to cover you because you've had this. So it's a terrible system.
Well, yeah, and we'll see what comes out of this. I'm hoping for something, but man, most of us, if you look at the polling, are not too thrilled with what's coming. And you're right, the Obamacare was timed, and this is timed. And I've noticed some provisions in here that are timed, so some of the moderate will be already out of office. You know, it's time, so let the next guy worry about it. All right, let's go to the phones because the lines are lit. Let's get to as many calls as we can, and I'll also try and address the emails that we've gotten. Pat, in Long Beach, you're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. What is your question?
I have a question about pulmonary hypertension.
Okay.
What is it?
Oh, go ahead, David.
That's a good question, Pat. A lot of people have this and actually don't even know this. There's a vein that goes, that carries the blood that has lost its oxygen back to the lung. And if the lung is not working well, if the lung has some restrictive components to it, and there are a lot of conditions now that create this. The most common is the pulmonary fibrosis, which is becoming much more commonplace because we're diagnosing this better. The lung is not quite as elastic, and so the blood flow back to the lung is restricted. And this is pulmonary hypertension, so that the pressure needed to get the blood circulating through the lung is diminished, and people don't oxygenate their lungs as well. That's pulmonary hypertension. And the longer this goes on and the more serious that the restrictive component of the lung tissue is, the harder it is for people to get well oxygenated. And what happens from that is that they are fatigued. They don't breathe as well. They can't do as much. And it's not, again, an uncommon condition. We're seeing more and more of this. Does somebody in your family have this?
Yes, my son. I've spoken to you before about him. He's on dialysis. He has diabetes. And he has a fistula, but we've had fistula repair. They put in like about 5 or 6 stents, and that is not viable anymore. So they put in a new fistula in the other arm, but it did not take. His veins and ours are very small and deep. The only thing they can do is put in a graft. But they said he's not a candidate for general surgery because of his lungs. He's had many pulmonary embolies. Mm. So apparently that must be scarring his lungs.
And that's exactly, Pat, what we spoke about, is that the lung tissue itself becomes less elastic and less functional. And this goes backwards then to the veins that try to feed into the lungs. And getting him a fistula, for those listening, for dialysis, it's a matter of taking the blood vessels in the arm and combining them, taking the artery and the vein and making it basically one vessel so that you can have easy access to the dialysis machine. But that blood does have to circulate through the lungs. And if the lungs are compromised, then it's going to be a problem for him to have his circulation going well enough into that dialysis machine. So these are serious problems that he has.
Yes, I understand that. He's got, he has ports in now so he can be dialyzed. He had ports in before, couple different times he's had to have ports, and they always get infected.
Pat, is he a candidate for a transplant?
Oh, no.
So
no.
He's beyond that.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. How old is your son?
He'll be 55.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, you sound like a good mom and an advocate. You know, make sure that we have your number, Pat, and maybe we'll try and reach you off the air so we can help you in a little more of a detailed way. Let's go to Janet. Janet in Simi Valley, you're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. What's your question? Janet, turn down your radio, and what's your question? Hello? All right, they have to have...
No, you have me.
Oh, I still have... Who do I have? I have Pat, you still
have?
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
You shouldn't... Boy, hey, Dino, you're going to have to refresh my... Oh, there you go. I think I figured this out. Go ahead, Janet in Simi Valley, is it that I got you now?
Yeah.
All right, there you go. I'm sorry, we had a problem with our phone system. What's your question?
Okay, there is a new procedure called an O-shot for incontinence, Dr. Runnels, and I'm wondering what Dr. Kemper thinks about it as far as incontinence goes.
Janet, this is a procedure that sort of pushes up the bladder so that you are less likely to lose the urine, and it is a new procedure. We haven't seen this long enough to really have any data to tell you whether this is safe enough, what the long-term complications are going to be. So you're sort of, no pun intended, you're on the cutting edge of this. And if it does work, and if it does tighten that tissue around the outlet of the bladder, this will be good news for people. But I can't comment enough because there's not really enough data on this.
Okay.
Smart. So just be careful with that. You know it's funny.
I'd wait a little bit.
When she said the O shot, you know, there's another O shot supposedly that's to give women orgasms. You realize that what the other O shot is? Does that work, or you don't know about that either? If it's valid.
I don't think it's valid. I mean, I know it's been out. It's been tried, but I don't think it hasn't had great press. So
okay. All right. And do you, by the way, that O shot, is it given into the, yeah, really? Okay, check, please. No go. So one of the big stories, David, is this this girl graduated high school in 2016, Lauren Seitz, in Ohio. She went out with a youth ministry group to travel and sing, and she was whitewater rafting, but it was in a man-made whitewater river. So everybody fell out. Everybody had a good time. She, however, got an infection. And the hospital that she was admitted to thought she had meningitis, but what it was the presence of this Naegleria fowleri, which is that brain-eating amoeba. And they filed a lawsuit because she died a couple days later for $1 million of damages, and they said that they should have known that this bacteria was in the water. It's easy to test for. You can kill it with chlorine. You get it through your nose, et cetera. And people have been infected in the United States. 140 people have been infected with this. It always makes me nervous when I go to a water park. I always tell the story of my water park thing. I took Robert once, and I'm watching, like, it looked like there are oxen in there and women washing clothes. There are no bathrooms. You go, where's the bathroom? And the guy laughs. Goes, really? No one uses the bathroom. So I'm thinking, and there's a foam head on the water, and I'm thinking, I'm not checking for sores. I'm looking under Robert's scalp to see what's there. What is the chance of getting something like that, either a meningitis or this brain-eating amoeba? I'm guess rarer. But now with the heat out there, a lot of people go to water parks. A lot of people are swimming in places. And you're nodding your head like, yes, it is a concern.
Well, it's also a concern, Peter, as you said, when the temperatures go up, the water, cleaning that water becomes harder. Also, if you have children that have pre-existing conditions, if you have diabetic children, if you have kids that are immunocompromised and their immune system isn't going to fight these things off well. So if you are a parent with a challenged child, I'd be very cautious about these water parks.
All right. I'm cautious. I think even if you're not, I'd be. The other thing that always gets me, if I may, before we take a commercial break, and then we'll get to Brian and Donald and everybody else calling. Anybody else who wants to call in and get to talk to Dr. Kemper, 800-222-5222. It's the remember the water, the Shamu shows and all that stuff at the you know, what's it called, SeaWorld and all. They always put the challenge kids in the wheelchairs and stuff that have no hair and they've gone through stuff in the splash zone. And the kid's trying to eat a fry, and they're being hit with 8 million gallons of whale-pooped semen. Who knows what's in there? But the whale's swimming in that all day. And that's I always think to myself, if I had a kid who's immune-challenged, do you really want to hit him with whale? Now, finish your popcorn. Just because it was hit with whale turd, microscopic whale turd, sure. And then you wonder why Billy gets a fever the next day. So that's the other thing people should be aware of. If you're taking a kid who has some kind of immune problems, to a water park or a theme show. You don't want him hit with seal water or or stingray water. Not a good idea sticking their hand in there. Remember, the animals are in there doing whatever they do in there. And that water is not the cleanest water in the world.
Well, so. One can make the same argument about going in the ocean at this point, because there are a lot of polluted oceans and the same issue.
That's true. They are pooping in there in a big way. I didn't even think of that, except the littler tanks. It always bothers me that the sickest kids are put right up front and they're the ones who are laughing as they get hit. And I just picture the next day. As they become compromised because they got hit with whale, you know what. All right, Talk Radio 790 KBC, 800-222-5222. Ryan and then Donald and then Rita and everybody else will get to your call next year. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tone the 10 continues. That's Kenny Rogers, the gambler's last deal. It's coming to town July 30th. You could be going if you play the Peter Tone news quiz and get most of the answers right. Or you can see Ann Wilson of Heart. That's next hour. We've got some legal issues to talk about. The lines are all lit. Rita and Theodore and Brian and Donald and Dana will try and get to you all after the bottom of the hour news. So hold on. But David, I wanted to ask you about immunotherapy for prostate cancer. So many people suffer from prostate cancer, and there are new emerging therapies that are showing promise to treat prostate cancer. And one of them is immunotherapy. Can you address that real quick before we go to break? What's the difference?
Generally, what immunotherapy is that when there's something in the system that creates an reaction within the body, an antibody is formed in order to knock that thing out. And immunotherapy is when you have a cancer cell that is foreign to the system. If you create an antibody against that cell to knock out that cell or that mutating cell, that's what immunotherapy is. So now we're doing immunotherapy on several different types of cancers. We're taking these cancers and the proteins that these mutant cells create, and we're developing antibodies against these proteins. The problem with this is, first of all, that each cancer is specific. And then once you knock out that line of mutated cells, the cancers, like other viruses and bacteria, they mutate again in order to survive. So you have to just keep that process going.
But has it been successful and less invasive than other therapies?
Absolutely. And we're using this now for lung cancer. Now, we haven't been able to cure people with this. We've been able to extend their lifespan because the cure is difficult because, again, these cancer cells
they fight against it.
So it's a matter of continuing to take these.
But we're successfully using this more and more, and there are options that people are getting when they come in with prostate cancer?
Absolutely. And these treatments are very well tolerated. There's a treatment now there's several of these, but there are these immunotherapies that we use for solid tumors like prostate and also bone marrow tumors. Leukemias.
And they're available now. Coming up, I'll tell you about something you could actually take that can stave off Alzheimer's that's easy to buy, cheap to buy. And this report just came out for Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which pretty amazing information on this. I'll tell you what that is. We'll get to all of your calls right after the news, or try and get to most of your calls after the news here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. 800-222-5222 is the phone number. We'll be back with Peter Tilden and David Kipper right after this.
KABC News is live and local. At 10:31, I'm Jeff Whittle, and the Senate released its health care bill to repeal and replace Obamacare this morning. House Speaker Paul Ryan says this is just the start of the debate.
From what I understand, their bill tracks in many ways along the lines of the House bill. I think that's very good. I'm not going to opine on their process. They gave us the space to go through our deliberative process. The last thing I want to do is be disrespectful of their process. They have a lengthy process ahead of them.
The Senate version is said to contain more generous tax credits for low-income and older Americans than the House version. It also ends Obamacare mandates for individuals and employers. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell hopes to hold a vote on the legislation next week. It's already passed the House. President Donald Trump tweeted today he did not make and has no recordings of his private conversations with James Comey before firing Comey as FBI director earlier this year. After he fired Comey, Trump hinted he'd secretly recorded their conversations in which he allegedly asked Comey to drop his investigation of fired National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, according to Comey. The president then refused to say whether those tapes existed or not for at least 6 weeks before today's tweet, which happened right about the same time the Senate Republicans released their health care bill. Now, tomorrow, by the way, was the deadline set by Congress to turn over any such tapes that Trump may have had. And sheriff's deputies fatally shot a 17-year-old boy while they were trying to break up a party in Palmdale around 3:45 this morning. Authorities haven't announced why deputies shot the boy, who died at the hospital around 45 minutes later. Actually, they're holding a news conference right now. Here is just a clip of what was announced.
This is a location they've responded to at least four times in the past 2 months for loud music and or gang-related calls.
So we'll have more on that coming up. A news videographer at the scene says a dog attacked one of the responding deputies, and we're hearing that one deputy was bit and that the dead teen was the dog's owner. Talk radio 790 KABC Sports. Dodgers embarrassed the Mets 8-2 for LA's sixth straight win. The Yankees snapped a seven-game skid, beating the Angels 8-4. LA Galaxy down Colorado 3-1. Lakers have the second overall pick in this afternoon's NBA draft, which tips off around 4 p.m., Clippers do not have a selection in the first two rounds. That's sports on the home of the LA Kings, 790 KABC. Traffic, a market check, weather, and more till then at 10 next. KABC News Time, 1032.
We're doing this to bother Dino, are you, Steve? There you go. A little bit of you, too.
Yes.
Talk radio, 790 KABC. You know what you two stands for? You know who else's money I'm taking? You, too. All right. Dr. Kippers here. All the lines are lit, 800-222-5222. We'll get to your calls in 1 second. I promise, David, my neighbor will get mad because they tease stuff, and I want to make sure I say it. Extra virgin olive oil can help with Alzheimer's. I read this study a couple times from my alma mater, Temple University. Shows extra virgin olive oil protects against memory loss, preserves the ability to learn, and reduces conditions associated with Alzheimer's disease. This from the Lewis Gatz School of Medicine. Those are pretty big claims, and it all has to do with brain inflammation. Do you agree with all that?
Yes. They did this study with mice, so I'm not sure how it translates, but actually what the olive oil does is that it preserves these nerve cells that are important in memory.
Amazing.
So that's one part of the Alzheimer's. The Alzheimer's story, to me, that's really fascinating is that we're now coming up with these diagnostics, Peter, that we're going to be able to pick this disease up 20 years before it's clinically apparent.
And hopefully do whatever is necessary to alleviate it. Man, that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
We have genetic markers now. We have biomarkers that we can get.
It would be stunning because you look at what that disease does to people and also what it does to the caregivers and the families around. So, all right, let's try and get through as many of these calls as we can. Let's go to Rita in Burbank. You're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. What's your question?
Regarding Carrie Fisher's autopsy, what physical findings in an autopsy would indicate that somebody died of sleep apnea? And then also, what causes sleep apnea? What could
Great question. Thank you, Rita.
Rita, the first part of your question, I have no idea. In 40 years of practice, I've never seen anyone die of sleep apnea. So,
but in the autopsy, how would you even determine if somebody had sleep apnea?
You actually can't. That's the point. I think your question is an excellent question. So I don't know how that got on that sheet. But what sleep apnea is when you are sleeping, you are basically, you're obstructing your airway. So your tongue goes back when you sleep and you lay on your back. You're not getting enough oxygen into the lungs. And over the 7-8 hours, hopefully, that you're sleeping, you're just not oxygenating. So people with sleep apnea end up having fatigue that's pretty severe come 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. There's also a sort of a triad of people with sleep apnea that they tend to be overweight, hypertensive, and they snore. So if you're listening and you have two or three of these things, you might, and you're tired come 4 o'clock in the afternoon,
get checked out.
I would get a sleep study. And the sleep studies can now be done in your home. They're very simple. But people that have sleep apnea and are not oxygenating well are at a much higher risk for diabetes, dementia, cancer, and other chronic illness.
So it sounds like you get it checked out. Real quick, David, before we take the other calls, do they yet have a breathing thing to help you that's not that big thing you put over your nose and the giant machine so you look like you're in NASA?
They have better techniques, but you're going to wear something. So if you're sleeping with somebody, you know, this is going to be part of that conversation. It's not an easy sell.
Do you see when people do sleep, when your patients do sleep with that device, and they get oxygenated. Do you see the difference? Is it startling?
Yes, and people do feel better, and frankly, people are healthier.
Well, then forget the partner. You do what makes you feel better.
Well, the partner's already in another room because that's of the snoring.
Theodore in Los Angeles, you're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. What's your question?
My question is, I suffer from severe spinal pain.
Okay.
My cervical spine is fused.
Okay.
My thoracic spine is fused, and my low back is bad. I have belonged to one of the major HMOs, and I've been all but chased up out of there, and I had to leave because I was getting no help. I'm now at one of the major colleges, and I don't know if I'm just unbelievable that I have the pain, but right now the oxycodone that I take is being the dosage is being lessened by 50%.
Right.
And I've got I won't have like maybe 3 weeks more.
I guess you're worried they're going to come off it.
Well,
All right, Theodore, here's what you do. Stay on the line for a minute is the first thing. We got to take a brief break. Yeah. We'll answer your question, or hopefully be able to answer your question when we come back, okay? One quick question before we go. How long have you been on the oxycodone?
I have taken oxycodone for over 25 years.
Okay, I got it.
I have never been addicted to it to where I took more than what was prescribed. And it helps.
And it's the only thing that helps you. All right, let's see if we can come to some kind of answer for you to help you out when we come back. We'll continue with Theodore, Donald, Dana, and everybody else. We'll try and get to your questions, too. Peter Tilden at 10 continues with Dr. David Kipper right after this. All my life. Talk Radio 790 KBC. More Kenny Rogers. Steve, and you see, said to me the other day, I can't believe how many hits this. It just goes and goes and goes. Great guy. Great interview. Fun to have in studio. He's going to be at the Pacific Amphitheater. You can win tickets next hour to him or Ann Wilson. Dr. Kipper's here. Let's continue with Theodore. So, Theodore, we don't have tons of time, but I know you've been on the oxycodone for a long time. I have a feeling, before David answers, that the reason that they're trying to get you off it is that with oxycodone, what happens is it actually is not, it's not good for you. B, you think it's helping you with the pain, but it's doing the reverse after a certain point. So I'm sure they're trying to titrate you down and get you slowly off it and find something that's not addictive that will work better as a replacement. David, am I right? Or
you're absolutely right. And Theodore, it's really a shame because this is a serious problem, and you've been on these medicines for so long, and they are good painkillers. But the problem with long-term opiate use, first of all, the withdrawal from these is going to be very difficult and needs to be supervised and is going to take some time, and you will have some discomfort from that. As Peter mentioned, there is a rebound pain syndrome that comes with long-term opiate use. So some of the pain that you're getting may actually be from the opiates. The nerve endings become desensitized, and your pain pathways in the brain change. There's also there's opioid-induced other problems with sleep, your immune system. So one of the things that you might want to consider are some of the other pain modulators. These are the non-steroidals, the gabapentins. Exercise and sleep are pain modulators. There is cognitive behavioral therapy programs now for pain modulation. So you do have options.
But you should actually look at the options, because, Theodore, it's not going to get better. You stay on the oxycodone. So they're not being mean in trying to wean you off of those. They're actually concerned about your future and all the other repercussions from staying on an oxycodone for so long. Let's take a brief break. When we come back, Lou, Donald, Dane, everybody else, we'll try and get to you in the remaining minutes of the show. Peter Tilden at 10 continues with Dr. David Kipper right after this.